Hey, friends and folks. Six here in editing with a quick little note. We are going to have some spoilers in this podcast for Kingdom Hearts 3. Otherwise, it's mostly general discussion, nothing really that spoilery, but Kingdom Hearts 3, we do mention some stuff. So heads up on that. Anyway, enjoy the pod. Hello, friends and folks, and welcome to the latest and greatest from Scanline Media. It's the Gimmick Awards. They're upon us. It's time to celebrate the year we've had in games, and also sometimes not exactly celebrate it. I'm Six Detmar.
I'm Jennifer Unkle. And yeah, I was about to say, we're kind of starting out with showing off. We're talking about games that are both great and not so great all at once.
Yeah, I mean, like, so a lot of awards have like a worst game or like a most disappointing game, and I don't like to be that negative. And also, I mean, it's never true, right? Like, if you want to do like worst game, then probably the actual answer is there's something you could find for like 99 cents on Steam that's the worst that you probably didn't play.
Totally.
Not interesting to talk about. It's more interesting to do what we're doing here. This award category is hot and cold. It's for games that were really, really kind of all over the place. They had things about them that were really great, and they had things about them that were not... Not. They were not.
They were just not.
So yeah, I mean, like, you know, One of the phrases that you're not allowed to use in writing about games anymore because it's dead to language is mixed bags, but mixed bags here, and Jen, what is our list of nominees?
So we have Death Stranding, The Outer Worlds, Disco Elysium, Sekiro, Kingdom Hearts 3, Pokemon Sword and Shield, A Plague Tale: Innocence, MLB The Show 19, and River City Girls.
So just right off the bat, I'm going to take off MLB The Show 19. This is on here because, like, this is on me. It's not really on the game, right? I am not a sports game person. Last year, I played a ton, well, okay, I guess at this point 2 years ago, it's January, but 2 years ago, I played a ton of MLB The Show 18. It was one of my games of the year. I loved it. I kind of picked it up out of nowhere. I like baseball, but I haven't really played any baseball games. And I was like, this is great. I'm having so much fun. I'm playing this basically like a single player RPG. And this is fantastic. And when they announced MLB The Show 19, they were like, oh, and we're making all these changes and get hype and truck stick is, no, there was no truck stick. And I was like, okay, great. I love it. And I'm gonna, I picked it up day one, and I was like, oh, right, it's the sports game thing. This is the same game.
Yeah, it's welcome to the cycle.
It's, exactly.
It's the reason why, like, every once in a blue moon, I'll pick up a Madden game or something along those lines. And it's like, I'm set for the next 5 or 6 years, maybe. I don't need another one of those because it'll play exactly the same. Like, they might do things where, oh, this time this team has a different motion captured intro, but I don't follow the sport nearly closely enough to actually care about roster changes. And when you get down to it, if you're buying a second one of these, you're going into it for a roster change.
Yeah. So as I say, I don't really think this is on the game. It's mostly just like, this is me for the first time really encountering that, like, oh, yearly sports games, huh?
Yeah. Sadly, ever since stuff like EA Sports Big died down, you're not getting that situation of, oh, we're trying this whole new gameplay mechanic, or we're adding new funky arenas. You just have the same baseball fields over and over again.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, they made some changes. I'm not trying to say they were lazy or anything. It's just like, you know, it's baseball. I love baseball, but it's baseball. I could have just kept playing 18, and I probably should have.
Yeah.
So we can cut it from this list. It's not really. I mean, I think it deserves mentioning, but it's not really in the spirit. It's like, it's not really a winner material.
Mm-hmm. If I'm next to cut, I'd probably cut The Outer Worlds, if only because I'm not as far in it as I was expecting to be when I was when I picked it up, essentially. And that's my main disappointment. Like, I've heard that the game kind of drops the ball in a big way near the end and isn't as revolutionary as its marketing made it out to be. But it's one of those situations where I guess my biggest disappointment with it is I came out of the gate thinking that this game is really amazing, and I lost steam on it within the last, within 5 or 10 hours, something like that.
Yeah, I lost steam really. I mean, like, I guess for me, like, it's a tight and fairly well-made Bethesda game, but it's a Bethesda game. And so, like, I don't know.
Once the charm and amazement wears off in terms of, oh, they actually made one of these that isn't a total broken mess, which it still has some pretty serious problems. Like, I ran into something, a nasty bug where your characters, if you happen to be talking to someone while a character is climbing up a ladder, they'll just be stuck climbing that ladder forever, and they'll climb out of the ship and die. So your companion you'll suddenly get a notification saying, oh, you failed your companion quest because X character died. And eventually one of the developers found and caught that, but it was still one of those things that's like, yeah, games of this type, it seems incredibly difficult to put into a playable form, and they managed to do that and more, but it's still, I think the biggest problem overall is that the entire thing is written in a parodical sense. Like, it doesn't know when to ever talk about anything seriously, and it's all cartoon stereotypes, even for the sides that are probably much, much better than the shithead capitalists.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If you read our site a few months ago, I was really impressed by the writing around Parvati. They do some really cool things with the They do some interesting things with the constraints of, we're going to have companions in this series, but they're not going to fall in love with you. They're not going to have any sort of romantic thing attached to you. You just get to be the wingman, and you get to be a pretty good wingman. And, I think in that regard, it does have a lot of going for it, but I didn't get far enough to get to the point where I was hit by the things people were most disappointed by, so it seems like a safe cut to me.
Okay. Fair enough. I think Sekiro's gonna do really well on this list. Sekiro is a game that both of us streamed this year. That both of us had, by the way, throughout these whole awards, we're gonna be saying this year even though it's next year. We're talking about this year as in the year that we're discussing. Anyway, both of us streamed this year. Both of us had some really cool moments. And I think we both have a lot of respect for the game's, like, art and level design and the combat feel. And it's just so aggressively mean.
Exactly.
It's a game that doesn't want you to play it, and so I don't know why they made it.
It's the closest thing we have to a new Shenmue as well. Like, and it's made by people who have made Shenmue games in the past, or at least a company that has made Shenmue games in the past.
Wait, you are not trying to say Shenmue. Did you mean to say Tenchu?
Tenchu, yeah.
I was like, what the fuck are you talking about?
I'm sorry, folks. I played a lot of Shenmue recently, so it's on my mind. But yeah, From Software made Tenchu Z, which is kind of known for being a thoroughly mediocre game, but I loved it a lot. And having stuff like the grapple back was like, oh, hell yeah, I get to play a ninja and grapple my way around and fight people with my awesome sword. But, yeah, it's... I got to the point where I spent, like, an hour and a half on this one boss, and I felt so good when I finally beat it. But then I walked 15 feet, and there was another mini-boss right there that was even tougher. And... Mm-hmm. It feels defeating to continue playing it.
Yeah. This is, I mean, like, I don't think it's a coincidence that this is the Souls game around which, like difficulty setting discussion has cropped up the most. This is the one where it feels the most egregious, where it just, it feels mean.
Especially when, and I know you have your problems with this game in particular, but, Jedi Fallen Order came out, and it turns out that, yeah, you totally can put a difficulty slider in one of these games.
Yeah, do you want to add Jedi Fallen Order to this list, or do you not?
I didn't play it, but okay. If you feel strongly about it, then...
I mean, I think what they do in the ending is cool. Otherwise, I don't think it has high highs.
Yeah, that was my thing. It was like... We're talking about hot and cold, but it seemed like you pretty thoroughly hated that game.
Yeah, I really, really disliked it a lot. I didn't know if you checked it out or not, so.
Yeah, I was thinking about it, and at some point it was like, I was so busy with everything else that... at one point I loaded up Origin, it was like, okay, time to subscribe to this $15 a month thing so I can just play it and then cancel, but... It wasn't really loading my credit card details, and at that point I was looking at something else, so it was like, whatever. I do want to play it at some point, though, just because the stuff they're doing with traversal and all that seems fun.
Mm-hmm. I think we can cut River City Girls. I was really disappointed by this game. It's got a really fantastic art style. The soundtrack is great. And you know, it's, you know, Kunio-kun/River City combat. It feels pretty good for what it is, which is a side scrolling, you know, pixel beat 'em up. The writing is offensive. It's not just bad, it's insulting, and it makes me angry. There are parts where it's just stupid, right? Where they're like, oh, puberty is an acronym that stands for, like, punching bricks. And it's like punching until bricks explode, blah, blah, blah. It's like, that's not even a joke. You just wrote a stupid thing that makes you look like an idiot. But then there's also just a bunch of, like, weird stuff around the way they treat the characters that's just really like, you know, this sucks. I mean, like, why are you making this game if you're not a fan of your own characters?
Mm-hmm. I heard about the true ending, and oof.
It just sucks. Like, I really don't understand why you would create main characters for you to dunk on. If you're creating them, why don't you make them things you like? What are you doing? It's just baffling. So honestly, I think the problem is it doesn't have high enough highs. I mean, I think it's fun enough to play, but like, it's just a beat-em-up. It's not like they had made any big innovations in that space. I don't know. There might be parts of it that go on best moment or sequence when we do that. You can do a fucking, like, running, like, power dab that does crazy damage and has, like, a rainbow trail effect. And that's one of the coolest moves I've ever done. But... yeah, definitely not high enough to be a hot and cold contender.
Okay. So, we're at 6 games right now. Do you think we should put them into 5 before we order them, or cut them down to 3?
Let's do 3.
Okay. In that case, I think that Pokemon Sword and Shield is a safe cut as well. It definitely has disappointing elements to it, like... I'm not one who cares about this so much, but it does kind of stink that you can't get all of the Pokemon just because some of your favorites probably aren't in there. It seems like the story mode is a little more shallow, and frankly, the enemy team in this game is so much worse than Team Skull. It's ridiculous. But it's one of the situations where, I don't know, I'm still playing through it. Maybe I'd feel differently if I had finished it, but it definitely feels like one that's a slightly weaker Pokemon than the other ones, but it's still a pretty decent Pokemon when you're actually getting into it and doing the fights and all that.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, I think this is another situation where I don't think it's hot enough. I was really disappointed by Sword and Shield. I thought, like, I found it really boring. And as a longtime fan of the Pokemon series, that's a really disappointing thing for me. But, like, you know, there were moments of, like, this Pokemon design is really cool, but there are zero moments in the story where you're like, wow, what's happening is really cool. And so I don't think it has the highs to hang. Again, this category is weird because we're trying to reward games that aren't necessarily trash. They're just games that are really up and down, that represent, like, that I don't think anyone else can properly give an award to, right? Well, I mean, not like no one else can, but, like, you can't put these games, like, the ones that are going to win this, you can't put them in worst game because they're not, like, just bad, but you also can't put them in best game because they're definitely not just good. There's these weird mixed experiences, and I don't think Sword and Shield was mixed enough. I think it was a very, like, even game that was constantly a little bit disappointing.
Yeah, that's a good way to look at it.
So Jen, talk to me about Kingdom Hearts 3, because I hated Kingdom Hearts 3.
So Kingdom Hearts 3, in a lot of ways, gives me everything that I've been hoping for ever since I played through 2 and learned more about what Birth by Sleep actually was. It's a situation where it gives us some finality in terms of some of these character stories. It spends a decent chunk of time just diving right into all the Organization 13 bullshit and having surprising twists there, and it was a very emotionally satisfying game where I ended up crying a lot at the end just because it knew how to take some of bring these characters together and give some of them catharsis. Like, not just giving me catharsis, but seeing these characters on screen finally reach a point where all of this awful suffering they've been going through is over now was really powerful for me. And on a more ridiculous sense, I enjoy how much Sora becomes Goku in this one. Like, there's totally this moment where Sora eats it, goes into this heaven-like area, meets God, and basically finds a way to revive himself, and is like, hey, just so you know, God, we're friends now. And God, which is in this world a small plush that has a little bit of life in it, is like, you're weird, but okay, I guess that's how this works. And it also did that whole great Nier Automata thing where you end up using help from other people around you to fight this climactic battle. At the same time, it strips out a lot of things that I think are pretty central to why I like Kingdom Hearts. Like, they took out all of the Final Fantasy stuff, like all of the Square stuff except for a handful of characters, to the point where they're re-injecting them in the in the $40 DLC that's coming out in January. And most egregiously, well, before we get to that, also just we're spending more times in more in newer Disney worlds, and it's hammering home Disney kind of sucks. Like, it's fun to visit Big Hero 6, and it was funny that the animators used the opportunity to be like, oh, hey, we could do Frozen better than Frozen. Fuck you guys. But, I don't know. I just have no attachment to this modern version, these modern Disney properties, because they all feel really stale and uninteresting. And... Well,
I mean, I do have attachment to those Disney properties, and I think their implementation was trash. I mean, like, if you think back to, you know, like, Kingdom Hearts 1, when you went to Alice in Wonderland's world, it was like you were, like, Alice was on trial and you were going around gathering clues to get her off, right? It's like mm-hmm. Sora was, in his own way, worked into the story. Whereas in Kingdom Hearts 3, your interaction with Frozen is standing there in the corner while Elsa does, you know, let it go. And just standing there. It's really, really sloppy.
Totally. And they do think of some fun things to do, like in the Pirates world and Big Hero 6. That I feel like Big Hero 6 was one of the stronger levels in it. But overall, it's... introduces a lot of weird gimmicks that it doesn't give you enough time to get into, and it feels incredibly surface level in a way that the other games didn't, even going back to them, like, recently. And the big elephant in the room, Tetsuya Nomura, just hates women. He hates women. Like, there's no other way to explain what happens to several significant, prominent female characters in Kingdom Hearts 3. And it's, do we get, how spoiler do we get here?
I mean, I'll have to, we've already gotten spoiler, because you already talked about Sora talking to God, so I'm going to have to inject a spoiler warning at the start of this podcast, so go off.
Okay. So, Nomura, I mean, so, we finally get Kairi doing something. We have her training to be a Keyblade Master with Axel/... God, what's his...
Leah.
Slash Leah. You get these good moments with those two, just bonding and stuff like that. And, like, she's finally in it. She's finally gonna fight and stuff. Oh, she gets kidnapped immediately and gets fucking killed. Like, what is that? You can't do that. It's maddening. And... even more so when you put it right next to Aqua, who has that whole moment where she goes dark for a little bit, and then that's 10 or 15 minutes, and then she more or less disappears from the story after she becomes not dark anymore.
Well, and like, the whole pitch of this game was like, okay, this is the big battle. This is all the Keyblade Masters versus all the Master... or Wielders. They're not all Masters, but all the Keyblade Wielders versus all the, like, the members of Organization 13, the Pieces of Darkness. And there are fewer playable characters than there were in Birth by Sleep.
Yeah. And again, they seem to be addressing that with the DLC, but it's like, this should have been in the game already. All of this. Like, this... there are certain things that people expect from Kingdom Hearts, and also there are certain things that you should have done as the ending of a... If we're going to go by the numbers, it's the ending of a trilogy. Mm. And maybe closer to, say, ending of a saga, but it shouldn't have dropped the ball in some pretty major ways. Like, even with the stuff where... like, I know that the various stuff around Organization 13 has been pretty, like, you don't understand what the hell is going on sort of way. But here it's in a situation where you see characters being like, oh, I'm going to work on this plan and secretly defect and stuff like that. And then you never see that shit on screen.
I feel like Kingdom Hearts 3, I mean, like, it is not a rushed game. They had so much time to make this game. And I feel like it's a huge condemnation of Nomura's attention span in just about every way. I think a lot of the worlds are underbaked. I think the story like forgets its own plot points and is bad. And like even the combat system, like the combat system, you start off the game and you're like, okay, this is like Kingdom Hearts, this plays like Kingdom Hearts 2 for about 5 minutes, and they're like, okay, now you've also got these like you know, the acrobatic stuff from Dreamed Up Distance, and now you've got familiars, and now you've got Shotlock, and now you've got Keyblade forms, and it's like there are so many mechanics, it just doesn't cohere in the slightest. It's the most like over-designed, over-complicated combat system I've ever seen.
And then you have the attractions, which straight up break everything. Like, you get them way too often, the animations go on forever. They, like, for 75% of that game, you can hit an attraction and be just sit there for like 30 seconds to a minute as it does its thing and clears things out.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think that in some ways that attraction system did paper over some of those combat deficiencies, but at the same time, it's another mechanic to remember, or a mechanic you find yourself purposefully avoiding so you can get in some good Keyblade thwacking action.
Yeah, and I do think you're right that it papers over some stuff, because when you don't when you don't have those things to rely on, or you choose not to, you learn how badly designed some of these fights are. It's a really bad combat system from a series that I actually classically think has a really great combat system. I think Kingdom Hearts 2's combat system was really good.
It almost feels like growing pains with that engine. Like, I don't know exactly everything behind the scenes with Square Enix, but they spent a lot of time and money investing in this Crystal Tools thing they used for 14 and 15, and it looked like they were using that for Versus 13 before that got cut. And there's something about the way that everything is constructed with the Unreal Engine in Kingdom Hearts 3, where it's like, at some point they realized, okay, Crystal Tools kind of sucks. We need to switch over, and we need to carry everything over. And there's a bit of a plasticky sense to everything that feels like, oh, they're getting used to this engine on the fly, and it's not going as well as it probably could have, or should have, for this epic conclusion.
Huh.
But yeah, it's one of those things where I do like, in spite of everything else, I do like it a whole lot, just because it gives me things that I've been longing for forever. And
I mean, if there's a category where it's gonna fit, this is it. I mean, it's not gonna go in Game of the Year.
Yeah, it's as much as part of me is like, well, it's kind of my Game of the Year, or at least it's on my personal list. I couldn't possibly, I would have no grounds to actually make it stick or even place in there. So, since, do we want to keep it on here for now?
Yeah, I guess we do.
Okay, do you want to try cutting something else then?
What about Plague Tale Innocence?
Yeah, I feel like that one's more of a gigantic surprise than, like, it's one of the situations where it was like, oh, this is, when I first started playing it, it was like, oh, this is really novel. It feels like a mid-range AA sort of game with a lot of production values behind it. And it did interesting things with the whole mechanics of avoiding the rats and hearing this tale about this older sister and her younger brother trying to help this younger brother escape because everyone blames him on the fact that there's a bunch of rats roaming the countryside now. And it's one of those things that just slowly deteriorates over time. Like, eventually, well, at first it's just about avoiding everyone as well as you can, because you're just this teenage girl with rocks that you can throw at people, and that's about it. But then you start figuring out how to make things, and at first it's just like, oh, if you throw this water thing at this torch, it'll go out, and then the rats can either go that direction or eat that person or something like that. and then it builds from there to, oh, hey, here's something you can throw on their helmets that makes them, that makes the helmets melt away, or it becomes a much more Sam Fisher Splinter Cell kind of thing, which, considering it's like a, it's taking place during the medieval plague and stuff like that, and considering how it was focused on this very personal, very up-close trauma beforehand, felt out of place. And then at some point, it just goes off the rails, and it turns out people have rat superpowers. Like, that's straight up in the trailers they used later, once it got nominated for the Game Awards and stuff like that. Like, at some point, they stopped hiding exactly what that game is, and I guess that's good on some level, because some people will see that, and I should clarify that I'm in the minority position here in terms of my reaction to this game. Like, a lot of people just gave it glowing reviews. You saw it on a lot of best of lists on sites like Giant Bomb. A lot of people like what this game has going for it, and I did too, up until the point where it stopped being the thing I was enjoying and revealed itself to be something that was very comic booky in a way I disliked.
Yeah, I mean, if you're out here standing the rat tornadoes, I mean, I guess live your best life, but I think that's some clear dumb shit.
Yeah. And it's one of those situations where it's like, oh, it turns out people were right, and you could just inject this person's blood into this religious person who wants to be the Pope, and now this Pope-to-be can control the white rats, which are the bad rats, and then you have the black rats, which are the good rats, because you need clashing colors to fight good versus Ein, to fight these two different sides. And it becomes ridiculous, like, oh, you have a secret basement where you're just draining people of blood, and that turns the rats white and evil. Okay. It has no consistency to it, and of course, I didn't go into it expecting it to be a story that's close to any sort of reality, just because you don't have rats that move that fast even before the superpowers come in. You do pick up some things every now and then, and they do explain their historical significance, but this is very much a game that that marketed itself at the beginning as a more, I don't know, Life is Strange kind of story. Like, Life is
rats,
Strange too.
Rats are strange. Rats are strange.
Indeed. But yeah, I felt like I was sold a game that was much different than what it actually was, and that's a shame.
So this feels like another, like, the highs aren't high enough for it to stay on this list.
Yeah, like, I did have that initial great time, but it was one of those things that as I played it, it just kept getting worse and worse, which I feel like is a good sign that it shouldn't be here.
So we're down to four now. We're down to Death Stranding, Disco Elysium, Sekiro, and Kingdom Hearts 3.
I almost feel like there's no point talking about Death Stranding because we know exactly, well, in terms of it being an option to cut, because that is, I would even go as far as saying that's the clear winner here, but.
Well, so, I think Death Stranding is really, like, it does really, really, in a lot of ways, like represent this whole category, what we're going for, because it is a game where, I mean, like, the way I would put it is, everything Kojima sucks. Everything Productions is good.
Mm-hmm. It's hard to say how much say he actually had in the moment-to-moment gameplay, other than the big ideas and stuff like that, but it manages to make encumbrance interesting, or even engaging, and that's not something I'd ever think I'd actually say, since it's always the thing I turn off when I'm playing on a PC. It's always something that it contributes. It's a game that makes me not mind the survival meters so much, and that is a massive thing.
Yeah, it's like, it's a mechanically focused walking sim. And that's a really weird idea, and it succeeds at that, I think, fantastically. The writing of the story is all atrocious, and as the game goes on, it leads further and further into those. And if it gets cut here, I would say that would be why, is because the more you play it, the more you're you're sinking into the black tar that is Kojima's fucking storytelling.
There's one section near the end that's like an hour of cutscenes. And, like, there are parts of those cutscenes that are really good. Like, it's a beautiful game, Mads Mikkelsen is giving it his all. Other people are giving it their all, but not as successfully.
Yeah. Some people's all in this game is not...
Yeah, the whole bit where you get Die Hardman's moment is... ranges between oh okay and really embarrassing. Like, I have to imagine if that person watched that scene back again after the game was finished, they'd be like, this is kind of awkward, huh? But yeah, and then some of the people are just straight up bad from beginning to end. Like the person who plays Fragile is...
like Lea Seydoux? She's terrible. I don't have an opinion of her as an actress at large. I'm not trying to indict her. But her performance in this game does not work.
Yeah, and then you have a side character who's in it for like 30 minutes, and her performance is so awful to the point where it feels like a bad idea that she's even in this in the first place. Like, whoever did the casting for that's like, well, you did dub over some of these other people, but you probably should have dubbed over this person too, because this is kind of atrocious.
Yeah, the Chiral artist.
Yeah.
I guess we should also talk about the other game on here we haven't spoken about at all is Disco Elysium. Which I think is a strong contender because I think in mechanical sense and in, like, I don't know, the difficulty of execution, Disco Elysium is an astonishing game. I think Disco Elysium is going to go down as a really important game. I think it's going to be really influential. I think it's going to lead to a lot of really amazing games. I cannot stand the writing in Disco Elysium.
That's the... yeah, like, some of the things you shared with me from it definitely made me go, oh, this... you were right when you told me I would probably hate this.
Yeah, it just... it's so... and I would even pay attention to this team's next project very happily, but this game is so... It's so, like... cynical and, like, self-satisfied, and it just is intolerable. And it has moments where I really, like, I mean, the writing is good. That's the thing, is it's not like Death Stranding. It's not like the writing is bad. It's, there are times when I'm reading the writing and I'm like, God, this, like, this prose or the way this character is written is really compelling, and I just hate what you're doing with it. It's just, like, you are using expert craftsmanship to build the most loathsome shit.
It felt, from what you've described of it, it seemed South Park-esque to me.
And I think it's more, like, I think it's, I think South Park-esque is right, except for, I don't it thinks it's funny in the way that, like, an asshole might laugh at someone suffering on the subway, right? Like, it's not like laugh out loud, like, super funny. It's more like the, isn't it funny how much everyone else sucks? Like, the sort of, like darkly amused at everyone else's misery. I just, this game's attitude just makes me so angry.
I think with all of that in mind, Sekiro is the odd game out, because it's one of those things where it's mechanically excellent, but it's also something that we weren't we weren't necessarily passionate enough to stick with, or its lows were so low that we didn't see a point in continuing. The rest of the games that are here are things that we saw through to completion for better and for worse.
I did not see through Disco Elysium. I have started 5 different playthroughs of Disco Elysium and played several hours of each one, so I think I've put as much time into Disco Elysium as it would take to beat the game, but not been able to do so. I keep searching for a way for this game, because there's so much smart about the game, I keep searching for a way for it to show me that it doesn't have to be this miserable little worm of a game. And it's just not willing to meet me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess I do think Sekiro is the odd one out here. I think I think it's too easy. The game is not too easy, but it's too easy to solve Sekiro's problems for this category. If you had a Sekiro Babies Edition, it would probably be on our Game of the Year list.
Totally. It's something that I wish I had. I wish I had both the skill and the patience to actually make it through Sekiro, because it's something I want to like so much. The various things that they do with it is neat. Watching someone play through the Lady Butterfly stuff, fantastic. But it's something I'll never be able to get through myself, just because it's too much. It's simply too much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's a really powerful representative, like stand-in for the way difficulty gets used as gatekeeping in games, and how I think that fucking sucks. But I don't think it's one of the 4 most hot and cold games of the year.
And at some point, I do feel like there's slightly diminishing returns when it comes to From Software's whole thing. Like,
sure.
I don't know how many times they can get away with making the same kind of game before people lose patience with it.
I think this is the best feeling one they've ever done, but yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah, the parry system is choosing to focus on one weapon. Like, there are more weapons, but focusing on that one weapon to that degree really elevated a lot of how that plays. But in response, they made the rest of it so much more demanding that I couldn't stand it.
Yeah. So that makes our top 3, Death Stranding, Disco Elysium, and Kingdom Hearts 3. I guess I'm too angry at Disco Elysium to let it win.
I already thought that based on how it's positioned, how they're positioned on the list as is, seems like a pretty good order to me. Like, Kingdom Hearts 3 feels like you hate it to such a degree that you find it even fewer redeeming qualities than I do. So that seems like a safe one to put at the bottom. Disco Elysium is something that I definitely see where you're coming from and probably feel the same way, but I haven't played it. And also, the strengths of it weren't enough to push you to the end.
Disco Elysium makes me feel like I have a peanut allergy, but I keep being like, but peanut butter seems so cool.
Oh, so me and pizza then.
Yeah. But also, every time you go to get pizza, it's Little Caesars.
Pizza. And then we have Death Stranding. I actually don't know whether you finished Death Stranding or not.
God, no. No, I don't want to do that to myself.
Yeah. But you've seen enough of where the ending goes to know.
I've seen enough. Yeah, I would say I've seen enough.
Yeah. I feel like the late game twists with this actual significance of Mads Mikkelsen in that game.
Oh, fucking Christ.
Have you seen that stuff?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. It takes stuff away from what they were setting up earlier. Like
it does when we were setting up these categories months ago, and I was like, I want to put Mads Mikkelsen on Best New Character, and you were like, are you sure? And I was like, yeah, he's really fun. I did not yet know how the end of the game went for good old Mads.
Yeah, the details they end up providing aren't nearly as satisfying as the setup, and it makes the whole. It makes every interaction between Sam and Mads in that game.
Cliff. Because he's an obstacle.
Oh, right. God. it makes the interactions between Sam and Cliff. Like, it robs a lot of the stuff from that. And that's sad.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really bad. But, building roads, making deliveries, that feels really good. I don't, you know what? Once upon a time, there was a game called Metal Gear 2 Snake's Revenge. That was the people who made Metal Gear without Kojima making their own game. What if we got Death Stranding 2 Sam's Revenge, where Kojima just didn't get to be involved and it was just his team? I would be here for that.
Yeah, and like, even if it's a situation where they don't, it doesn't have any story, and it's, like, just in a basic expansion where it's, like, the continuing adventures, and you're getting a lot of just smaller stories about people. Smaller stories that aren't, oh, I'm Heartman because I put myself into cardiac arrest every 30 minutes, so I can be with my family, with my dead wife for 2 minutes. It's like,
welcome to the European Union of Cities, Sam. You gotta walk across this new region.
you got to tie together Central Europe knot.
Samantha Ireland Strand. Okay. Yeah, Death Stranding is the most hot and cold game of the year. do we want to do 1, 2, 3 ordered list then?
Sure.
Okay, so it's Death Stranding, then Disco Elysium, then Kingdom Hearts 3?
That's how I feel.
You're lucky I'm this mad about Disco Elysium, because yikes. But I'll let you get away with this one.
Wait, if you were that mad about Disco Elysium, wouldn't you put it at 3 instead of 2?
Part of what makes me mad is that I want to stop trying to play it, and I can't. I'm already thinking about my next playthrough. Well, not playthrough, play. I won't play through, I'm sure. I'll get another 2 hours in and, like, go wash my mouth out with fucking alcohol to get the taste out of my mouth.
Yeah, and I've already resigned myself to the truth that I will pay for that Kingdom Hearts DLC in the hopes that it will make everything better. And it'll make some things better, but it will definitely not make everything better.
If you look at a calendar, you can figure out the time when I realized that I was going to keep trying to play Disco Elysium for months, right around the same time I stopped giving you shit about Kingdom Hearts 3. Because I was like, wait, I have to shut the fuck up. So that's the three most hot and cold games of the year. We will have plenty more awards for you, all with their own episode. We're giving you little self-contained episodes. Listen to the categories you want. I think you should listen to all of them. I think they're all going to be good conversations. We'll have guests on some of them, but you know, pick and choose as you like. But we're going to kick it here to our little plug zone. Jen, why don't you go first?
Okay, I'm at JBU3 on Twitter. Most of my stuff can be found on scanlinemedia.com or patreon.com/scanlinemedia. We do have a Novel Not New, a True End podcast on abnormalmapping.com or readinggames.online. We are still working on getting that back up off the ground, but we're making some exciting strides in that direction, so that's cool.
Mm-hmm. And I'm Six Detmar. You can find me on Twitter at Six Detmar. You can find all my work the same places as Jen. And yeah, I'm excited for more awards and for more stuff and for a great 2020. Cook Serve Delicious 3 is coming out this year. It's coming out this month, actually. It's going to be great. I'm excited.
Yeah, there's a lot of indie stuff that I'm super stoked for, or even just non-indie stuff, like Animal Crossing is coming out in 2 months. That's going to be fun.
Hopefully. I Animal Crossing, I don't resent it in the same way, but Animal Crossing is very much a Disco Elysium thing for me, where I swear to God, I probably like peanut butter, but it turns out I'm allergic to peanuts.
Fair enough.
But anyway, thanks so much for listening, folks, and peace out.
Later.